The Colorado PUC chair is sounding the alarm over the mind-boggling spending request from Xcel to meet the state's climate goals. Plus, the new Trump administration issues a raft of executive orders that could impact Colorado energy policy. We discuss all this and more on this week's edition of the Power Gab podcast. I'm co-host Jake Fogelman, and you're listening to the audio version of the show. If you like what you hear, please consider subscribing and sharing. And to check out the video version, head on over to powergab.org for new episodes every week. Enjoy! All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of Power Gab, your go-to show for all things energy and environmental policy in the state of Colorado. I'm Jake Fogelman, joined as always by my co-host Amy Cook. This week's episode, we want to talk to you a little bit about something that actually was first brought to our attention by a Power Gab listener. You know, you hear Amy and I talk all the time about how informed our listeners are, and this was a perfect example of that. Flagging the PUC's last weekly meeting, the three commissioners, you know, every week they meet and then go through whatever happens to be on their docket. And towards the end of their discussions, they had a little bit of a time for PUC Chair Eric Blank to sort of give his thoughts on some of the pressing rate cases and other tariffs and stuff that are before the commission. And he laid out some pretty stark warnings for at least potential affordability risks, I should say. And, you know, that prompted you to write a column about this, and we published it in Complete Colorado. We'll drop that in the show notes. But Amy, why don't you tell us a little bit about what we heard from the Public Utility Commission chair?
Yeah. By the way, hello from very cold Florida. Yes, I'm in a hotel room in Florida speaking at a conference, but and it's probably warmer actually in Colorado than it is here. I haven't looked, but it's awfully cold in the South right now. So this was really interesting, and I do want to thank that Power Gab listener who brought that to our attention, because it was the last, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes of that PUC hearing. And Eric Blank, the chair of the commission, and he's just speaking, right? And one of the things we brought up earlier in the, or actually it was last year, was when Commissioner Blank told Utility Dive that one of his biggest concerns right now is affordability. So keeping on that theme of affordability, he started throwing out, he threw out some numbers, and he talked about, this was specifically for Xcel Energy. And he said, they want to spend another, $7.5 billion on projects between now and 2029. So that's that, roughly a 5-year time frame, $7.5 billion, which is, as the way you can look at it, almost, not quite, but almost doubles their rate base, their asset base, from when Commissioner Blank started. So this is in the next 5 years. And this is Xcel, which serves roughly 1.5 million ratepayers in Colorado. So not all of the ratepayers. This is one utility, certainly the largest utility, but it isn't all of the utilities. So $7.5 billion. And then he threw out a couple of other numbers of $38 billion needed for transmission lines and $43 billion. And these two are over the next 20 years for upgrades to the distribution system. Now, remember the Fenberg rider, but this is even more than that. So this is on top of the Fenberg rider. These were additional numbers. So that 38 plus 43 billion is $81 billion, if I did the math correctly, just for Xcel Energy. And he called those numbers mind-boggling. This is from... That is not a word we want to hear out of the PUC chair's mouth when it comes to our utility bills. Mind boggling. And that's what he said. So I wrote a column on it because, Jake, you and I have talked about this ad nauseum. But again, I'll say it again. We have been through this, right? We have predicted this. There is no pleasure in being right on this. In fact, I wish we were wrong. But back when he was candidate Polis, And he said, we are going to power the state with 100% renewables by 2040. And in 2017, we came up with a figure of $45 billion. And that seemed like a lot of money. Back in 2017, it was a lot of money. But he sort of mocked it, said we modeled a plan that wasn't even his. And that he knew then, this is what he was saying then, that it would, you know, he doesn't know exactly how much it's going to cost because he doesn't have the details, but that it was not going to cost $45 billion. And he was right, because what we're finding out is it's going to cost way more than that. And so part of it is we kept saying it and they're like, it's the Independence Institute. What, you know, they modeled a plan that wasn't even mine. I'm going to use a bottom up approach with market mechanisms, whatever that means. But fast forward, and there is no bottom up approach with market mechanisms. We talked about this again, thanks to a PowerGab listener who alerted us to some news, and Complete Colorado did a story on it, a directive that came out of the Polis, out of his office, that said it has to, he called it a whole of government approach, translation, top down mandates, forced march to 100% wind, solar, and batteries. So what we learned from that was he may have tisked it and tossed it aside, but in reality we were right. And right now Colorado is staring down the barrel of an economic crisis on affordability and reliability for the power grid and for your utility bills. Now, this doesn't mean we can't course correct. We can, but we need to have the political will. And that means Jared Polis et al. And his and the Colorado legislature has to admit that wind, solar, and batteries aren't going to work. They've even said that in their own, are the most expensive way to decarbonize and barely meets reliability targets per the Colorado Energy Office report. They need to admit that, and we need to fix it. And we can if we do things like add nuclear, we do consumer-regulated electricity, all things that we've talked about on this show. But the one thing that that I take away from that PUC hearing were Chairman Blank's description of these numbers are mind-boggling.
Yeah, mind-boggling, I think, is almost an understatement for some of these costs. I love that you brought up the fact that $45 billion seemed so out of this world to him. What was that? Six, seven years ago. When, you know, if you just take their own numbers of the Public Utilities Commission and his energy office, wind, solar, and batteries alone, we talked about this from the Colorado Energy Office study, right? $61 billion they found in costs, not including the transmission and distribution, right? And now his own Utilities Commission is talking about $43 billion just over the next 20 years for distribution, plus another $38 billion for the transmission. And yeah, maybe he's right. $45 billion was an unthinkable number because it was way lowballed from what this is really going to cost us. One other quote that I want to pull from Chair Blank, he also mentioned something that I think is particularly relevant to our listeners who happen to be XL ratepayers. And that is the fact that these numbers are being thrown around, these big capital investment numbers. But he said that XL has declined to provide long-term rate impact information for this proposed spending. He says it's a regular practice whenever they do these rate cases or tariffs to do that. And these numbers are so big that the company has just flat out declined to say what this is going to mean for bills of customers like you and I that are captive and have no other choice but to pay these bills for this policy course. And I think it's safe to say that with that amount of spending, it's going to jack up those bills.
So a couple of things about that. And Jake, I'm so glad you brought that up because I didn't even have time to get that into the column. But that could be a piece unto itself. So two things on that. One is they're not confident about the numbers, or they don't actually want to share the numbers. Like, yeah, they're looking at it going, if I tell what the actual numbers are, no one's going to do this. So that would be one. Now, two is that they're a monopoly utility, right? They are required to meet the load. And what tells me is they can't. They can't meet the load without massive build out. And that is something that we can fix other ways, like by consumer regulated electricity. And if they can't meet it, we should say, that's fine. We get it. You can't build it out. And we're not going to socialize all of those costs just because you have, there is an industry that is requiring a lot of power going forward, meaning data centers and AI platforms and everything else, that if they can't meet that load, we have to figure out other ways to do it. You can't socialize those costs on to ratepayers. And I'm gonna throw out one more thing on that, Jake, before we get to one other topic today. But so last week I was traveling, I was in DC, I was at another conference where I was speaking, and I was listening to a presentation right before my own, and it was a data center developer. And he was talking about load and what everybody was looking for. It's all the stuff that you know. They want it reliable, they want it fast, and they want it affordable. All the things that large users would want. So when he was done, I went up to him and I said, "Hey, because he was talking about states where people were going." I said, "Is there any chatter about Colorado?" And he sat there for a minute. And he's kind of scared. He, you know, kind of looking, he's thinking. And he goes, "No, there's no chatter about Colorado, really." And I don't, maybe he just doesn't know, but we have said this, the idea that data centers would come to Colorado is, and we'd lure them here with property tax incentives. And I said, would property tax incentives lure a data center to? But he burst out laughing. He goes, "No, we need power. We need power." So the point being, Colorado is not one of the states that's at the top of the list when it comes to this relatively new and sizable industry. Because he said, I don't know that there's bad or good. It's just that Colorado doesn't enter into the conversation. He said, you know, we talk about Utah, we talk about Wyoming, there's, you know, conversations about Oklahoma, West Virginia, Virginia, Georgia, North Carolina, South Carolina, all of these. But he said, no, not really on Colorado, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, no, that is fascinating. And just to air a little bit of frustration in this, all of this, because it just seems like over the last couple of months, there's sort of this hair on fire, sudden alarm about load growth. And you get that sense from these massive, you know, spending splashes you're seeing from utilities like Xcel, and that are in part being prompted by the state legislature with stuff like the Fenberg Rider that you referred to. Just in the next 5 years, Xcel wants to spend about $22 billion in Colorado to, quote unquote, meet this increased load growth. And the frustrating thing to me, and I'm sure you share some of this frustration, is that this was all entirely predictable and, in fact, was predicted by folks like us and others in our orbit that, to be fair, maybe the data center thing caught some people off guard, right? You know, developments happen quickly in the AI and tech space. I get it. But you set out to do a deliberate policy course of completely converting natural gas usage into electricity, completely doing away with gas-powered cars and making them electric cars. What did you think was going to happen? What did you think was going to be required to facilitate that across a several million person population? And it just seemed, I know the cat's already out of the bag and we're going down this path, but we've said, hey, did you think about the spending that this is going to, the reliability impacts that this load growth is going to cause that you're deliberately forcing onto one particular form of energy production? So, you know, a lot of this I think is almost crocodile tears, because what did you think was going to happen? Unfortunately, we're going to be stuck with the bill. But as we're coming close to the end of time, I know we did want to talk about another topic, and that could potentially intersect with Colorado energy policy as well. And that is, of course, former and now current President Trump taking office and kicking off his new term with just a raft of executive orders, including a few that had to do with energy. And in one in particular that sort of it remains to be seen what it's going to do, but opens up some interesting possibilities. If you want to share with the listeners what you think.
Yeah, it was interesting to watch those energy directives just fly. If you remember some of those, it was 7:45 in Colorado, so 9:45 in DC, and he's just signing away. Somebody's talking in his ear, sir. This one's on DEI, or this one's on offshore wind, or this one's on energy. He's like, oh yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, what was your question? And then taking questions from the press at the exact same time as he's signing things. And but the one that interests me, let me state that, but one that I think could be relevant to Colorado is, what does the national state of emergency for energy mean? In other words, and I've posed this question to a couple of regulatory attorneys, and I haven't gotten it. That's an interesting thought. Maybe let me get back to you has been the answer. But is that a stay of execution for Comanche and, for instance, maybe Craig Power? Or is it something that says, okay, if you want to shut those down because we're under this state of emergency for energy, meaning we've got to have more power, not less power, and we have to have more reliable power, not less reliable power. So if that's the case, does that mean that you can't, if you do close them down, then they have to be replaced with another like resource? In other words, another baseload resource with at least similar to, if not greater than, capacity factor. And it has to be ready before you shut down Comanche. In other words, you have to have a baseload power plant that replaces it, and it's got to be ready the minute you shut down Comanche. The next one has to go on. And same thing with Craig Power. You can't shut it down until you have it replaced. And I've also wondered that about power plants that are under, they're being closed down because there was a consent decree. Sierra Club sues the utility, and a consent decree agrees to shut it down. Does that a state of emergency supersede those kinds of decisions at the state level, and then those kinds of decisions in court that are a consent decree, some kind of an agreement between, say, Sierra Club and a utility? And the other one would be, what does it mean for oil and gas production in Colorado, which has been reduced thanks to draconian regulations, but most of that is on private land? Does that mean that, because it's a state of emergency, that federal law will supersede state law? And I just think those are interesting questions. And I don't know what that means for Colorado. It was just stuff that once that state of emergency was declared and we were thinking about it, it's like, I wonder what that does mean for Colorado. So I have those questions out there. If there's a listener or an attorney out there who's got an idea, please feel for, or has an answer for us, send it to us, because I would love to hear that. I've posed that to a couple of people, and it's usually, maybe let me get back to you. So I'm just curious about that, but I do think that's a big one.
Yeah, I think you're certainly right onto something there. Like you said, it'll probably be kicked to the attorneys to work out exactly what it means. But I think in terms of real practical reality, what it just signals is that this administration is taking very seriously the concerns of needing energy abundance, and in particular, energy with certain reliability characteristics that are perhaps lacking in the policy direction of the last several years. I know several of his energy executive orders specifically referred to certain resources like coal and gas and nuclear and geothermal and all the big, reliable, firm, dispatchable resources that we talk about so often during this show. And like you said, it kind of remains to be seen what policy levers that executive order is able to, create and pull at the state level. But the fact that it's top of mind, very clearly top of mind for this incoming administration is, I think, promising, to say the least. But as we're coming up on time here, Amy, unless you had anything else you wanted to mention to the listeners, I would kick it to you for your big takeaways of this week's episode.
Well, okay, so real quick, I'll say part of the strategy is for this stuff to have to move through the courts. So let it move through the courts and whatever that looks like, whatever that means. But as this stuff moves through the courts, does that mean that Comanche and Tri-State, or not Comanche and Craig Power, can stay open? I think that's a huge question. So number one, keep the word mind-boggling. Just remember that. You never want to hear it in relation to your utility bill. It's not a word we want to see or hear ever, but it has to do with our utility bills. So number one. Number two is, as this unfolds, keep an eye on what these executive orders mean for the state of Colorado in energy development. We know that oil and gas production in the state of Colorado is down because of draconian regulations from the state, and the impact on revenue in the state has been enormous. So what do the Trump executive orders mean for energy production in Colorado? I think that remains to be seen, especially that national state of emergency. And my last one, as always, and I was telling this to folks at this conference I went to, I said, I wish I didn't have to say this, but I do every time. I say, get a generator. You should have a generator, because the state of Colorado is going down a path where reliability is something we won't be able to just take for granted. So those are it for this week.
Yeah, sage advice, especially as cold as bitter cold is through Colorado and even in the South, it sounds like. So look into those generators, folks. That does it for us on another episode of PowerGab. If you like what you saw here, you can head over to powergab.org to check out our entire back catalog. We produce new episodes every single week. We're also available wherever you get your audio podcasts, whether that's Spotify or Apple. And if you want to suggest future show topics or guests you'd like to see us interview, you can send those over to info@powergab.org. As we mentioned during the show, we love to hear from our listeners. But until next week, we'll see you.
If you've enjoyed this episode of Power Gab, I hope you'll share it with a friend.
Or even an enemy.
You can listen to more episodes on all of your favorite streaming services. We release a new episode each week.
If you have a question, comment, or suggestion for a show topic, email info@powergab.org. And to watch the video version, just search the letters IITV for Independence Institute TV on YouTube for this and many other great conversations.